Luke or God's people?
Well, good evening, everyone. So we'll start our thoughts tonight with a quote by Mark Twain, who said this in 1899. You're probably aware Mark Twain was the author of works such as The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. Okay, so he said this about the Jews. If the statistics are right, the Jews constitute but 1% of the human race. It suggests a nebulous, dim puff of stardust lost in the blaze of the Milky Way. Properly, the Jew ought hardly to be heard of, but he is heard of, he's always been heard of. He's as prominent on the planet as any other people, and his commercial importance is extravagantly out of proportion to the smallness of his bulk. His contributions to the world's lists of great names in literature, science, art, music, finance, medicine, and obtuse learning are always way out of proportion to the weakness of his numbers. He has made a marvellous fight in this world in all the ages, and has done it with his hands tied behind him. He could be vain of himself and be excused for it. The Egyptians, the Babylonians, and the Persians rose, filled the planet with sound and splendour, and faded to dream stuff and passed away. The Greeks and the Romans followed and made a vast noise, and they are gone. Other peoples have sprung up and held their torch high for a time, but it's burned out, and they sit in twilight now or have vanished. The Jew saw them all, beat them all, and is now what he always was, exhibiting no decadence, no infirmities of age, no weakening of his parts, no slowing of his energies, no dulling of his alert and aggressive mind. All things are mortal but the Jew. All other forces pass, but he remains. So tonight we're going to look at the unique history of the Jews and to examine the question whether they are a fluke of history or whether they are in fact God's people. People who are witnesses to the fact that God does exist and his inspired word is the Bible that we have before us. So we'll look at the Jewish scattering, their persecution and their return. And we'll see the precise and accurate foretelling in the Bible of the history of the Jews. So we'll start by considering the scattering of the Jews from their homeland in Israel. So this first came about with the Assyrian conquest of the northern Jewish kingdom of Samaria. And at this point, the kingdom was split into two. So in around about 722 BC, with the deportation of some 27,000 Jewish captives. So around 150 years after this, the Babylonians captured the southern kingdom of Judah. So as you can see from the map on the screen, the Jews were initially scattered throughout the kingdoms of Assyria and Babylon, which today comprise parts of modern Iraq. It was from this point onwards that the Jews would not have a homeland for another 3,000 years. So for the next 600 or so years, a remnant of the people of Israel returned to the land, but they were always under subjection of the various nations around them. This was up until the Jews rose up. They had an uprising in 66 AD, and this was against their Roman rulers. And a consequence of this was that the wrath of the Roman Empire was brought upon them. So in AD 70, the Romans killed thousands of Jews, destroyed the temple, and sold thousands of others into slavery. It was these thousands that were sold into slavery which created this massive scattering of the Jews. So they went into all corners of the Roman Empire, which stretched across Europe, Asia, and Africa, as we can see from the map. So while they were scattered, the capital of their homeland was actually renamed Syria Palestina, hence Palestine came into being. And they were only allowed to enter the city of Jerusalem once a year. So from around AD 70, the Jewish scattering continued as the Jews moved from country to country and they established temporary homes there. So we can see from this map that the scattering was even more widespread by about 1500 AD. The Jews had been displaced as far as Britain, the Netherlands, and Lithuania. This scattering continued so that by the 19th century, there were Jews living in pretty much every nation of the world. They lived in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, China, and India. So from what we've seen, we can see that they were scattered from their homeland, and this is a historical fact. It's backed up with mountains of evidence. To ignore that the Jews were scattered would simply be illogical. Still, after reviewing this very brief history, you might think, well, why was the Jewish dispersion unique? Surely other nations have been slaves. Weren't there Celts, the Greeks, and the Africans? Weren't they all slaves? Weren't they taken from their countries by the Romans and dispersed throughout the empire? We could say, yes, they were, but here's the central point, that they didn't retain their national identity in the ways that the Jews did. The Jews remained as Jews wherever they were scattered to. What's more, when the Roman Empire dissolved, then the identity of being a Roman, despite being away from Rome, disappeared. Whereas the Jews, by contrast, even though they were away from their homeland for thousands of years, remained Jews. So is it any wonder that men throughout the ages have made comments about the Jews, such as, they are the most glorious nation that ever inhabited the earth. The Romans and their empire were but a bubble in comparison to the Jews. So we might ask, what happened to the Jews once they were scattered? How were they treated in the various lands that they ended up? So they were persecuted from almost the very beginning after they were scattered. This persecution developed because of the Roman Empire's adoption of Christianity. Therefore, in an absolute contradiction to Scripture, being a good Christian and persecuting the Jews went hand in hand, especially to these early so-called Christians. So from around 350 AD, the doctrine that the Jews had murdered Jesus began to firmly take hold. For instance, this man on the screen, John Chrysostom, who was Archbishop of Constantinople, and a man regarded by some historians as the greatest preacher in the early church. He openly preached this about the Jews. Jews are the most worthless of men. They are lecherous, greedy, rapacious. They are perfidious murderers of Christians. They worship the devil. Their religion is a sickness. The Jews are the odious assassins of Christ, and for killing God there is no expiation, no indulgence, no pardon. Christians may never cease vengeance. The Jews must live in servitude forever. It is incumbent on all Christians to hate the Jews. Another prominent church father, St. Augustine, wrote an entire treatise entitled Against the Jews, in which he writes this. The true image of the Hebrew is Judas Iscariot, who sells the Lord for silver. The Jew can never understand the scriptures and forever will bear the guilt for the death of Jesus. St. Augustine was widely popular in the Roman Empire and his works are widely read and quoted today. His views were really widely representative of the rising anti-Semitism of the time. There are a dozen more quotes like this from the founders of the early church. So how did this anti-Semitism that was preached spread into the Roman Empire? And then after the Roman Empire's fall, did it exist in medieval Europe? Well, because of this, it did, and it established deep roots across Europe and Asia, resulting in hundreds of expulsions and mass murders. So this map was created by a mathematician called Samuel Arbusman. And he created a database from the city-level data, and he did this on the presence of Jewish communities in Europe between 1100 and to the 1800s. And he did this from the 26-volume Encyclopedia Judaica. So the encyclopedia typically mentions where Jews entered a city, where they were persecuted, and then when they were expelled, and also when they were allowed re-entry. So as you might be able to see from the key, although it's probably quite small, the circles represent the cities that had at least one expulsion, and then the larger the circle, the more expulsions it represents. So you can see that there were many fewer of them on the map. So throughout this period, there were massacres in France in 1384 when 900 Jews were burned alive in a synagogue, in Germany at the start of the Second Crusade, and in Spain when a mob attacked the Juderia in Seville from all sides, killing 4,000 Jews, and the rest of them only escaped by submitting to baptism. There were also expulsions from England, France, and Austria. The Jews also became scapegoats for diseases such as the Black Death, and this continued to fuel the anti-Semitic teaching, which was furthered by Christians such as Martin Luther. So here's a picture of Martin Luther. So he posed the questions in 1543. What then shall we Christians do with this damned, rejected race of Jews? And his answer was this: first, their synagogue should be set on fire, and whatever does not burn up should be covered or spread over with dirt, so that no one may ever be able to see a cinder or stone of it. And this ought to be done for the honor of God and of Christianity, in order that God may see that we are Christians, and that we are not wittingly tolerated or approved of such public lying, cursing, and blasphemy of his Son and his Christians. Secondly, their homes should likewise be broken down and destroyed, for they perpetrate the same things that they do in their synagogues. For this reason, they ought to be put under one roof or in a stable, like gypsies, in order that they may realize that they are not masters in our land, as they boast, but miserable captives, as they complain of incessantly before God with their bitter wailing. Thirdly, they should be deprived of their prayer books and Talmuds, in which such idolatry lies, cursing and blasphemy are taught. Fourthly, their rabbis must be forbidden under threat of death to teach any more. So we can see in these bitter words of hatred that the anti-Semitism continued throughout the medieval period, and it was never really fully absent from the history of Europe. So it continued through the centuries with images such as this arising in the 19th century, which depicted the Jews as monstrous creatures while mocking their way of life. This second picture is an anti-Semitic caricature which was created in 1898 in France, and it shows Rothschild, whose family fortune at the time was possibly the largest private fortune in the world. It shows him with his hands over the world. So following this came perhaps the most famous form of anti-Semitism, of which we're all aware of, I'm sure, which was the Nazi Holocaust, in which over around 6 million Jews were systematically mass murdered at the hands of the Nazis. While history holds that anti-Semitism was not the only factor which caused the Holocaust, it played a very central role. Hitler drew on this indelible image of the Jews as treacherous, almost mythical creature, which must be wiped out in order to rid the world of this apparent evil. This is perhaps what incited ordinary men to commit unthinkable atrocities. So the continued persecution of the Jews in almost every place they went is unique, and there must be something special about the Jews, mustn't there? Otherwise, how could we possibly explain such a long-lasting hatred against a people who should have wanted to forget their identity, because their identity brought to them so much suffering? If we consider their history, the Jews of all people really would want to forget their identity. There must be something notable about the Jews, if despite all the odds they could survive, and not only could they survive, they could remain as Jews. I suppose it isn't surprising then that Winston Churchill, a man who was Prime Minister of Britain during the Holocaust and had an intimate knowledge of their plight, had this to say about them: "Some people like the Jews and some do not, but no thoughtful man can deny the fact that they are, beyond question, the most formidable and most remarkable race which has ever appeared in the world." So how can we explain this history, and why did all of this happen to the Jews? Well, the Bible provides a very comprehensive answer. It predicted with absolutely stunning accuracy the scattering and the persecution of the Jews, and it predicted it thousands of years before it happened. We can explain their unique history as coming about through the will of God, the creator of heaven and earth, and who has brought about the many persecutions towards them. The Jews are God's witnesses, and their continued existence and their long history proves that God is the creator of heaven and earth, and that his word, the Bible, is truth. Please turn with me to Leviticus and chapter 26. So Leviticus was written down under God's inspiration by Moses at least 2,000 years before the scattering occurred. This chapter contains a reinforcement of the law written by Moses for the Jews, and it gives great detail about the reward for following the Lord and the consequences of turning away from him. We know from much of the Old Testament that the Jews did turn away from God and served idols. If you would like to see some examples, then I can provide these afterwards. And so because of this turning away from God and their continued worship of idols, the people of Israel would be punished for their disobedience. So we read in Leviticus chapter 26 of the consequence of the nation of Israel's disobedience to God. So in verse 14 of Leviticus 26, "But if you will not listen to me and will not do all these commandments, if you spurn my statutes and if your soul abhors my rules, so that you will not do all my commandments but break my covenant, then this will I do to you. I will lay your cities waste, and I will make your sanctuaries desolate. I will not smell your pleasing aromas. I myself will devastate the land, so that your enemies who settle in it shall be appalled at it. And I will scatter you among the nations, and I will unsheathe the sword after you. And your land shall be a desolation, and your cities shall be a waste. Then the land shall enjoy its Sabbaths as long as it lies desolate, while you are in your enemy's land. The land shall rest and enjoy its Sabbaths. As long as it lies desolate, it shall have rest, the rest that it shall that it did not have on your Sabbaths when you were dwelling in it. And as for those of you who are left, I will send faintness into their hearts in the land of their enemies. The sound of a driven leaf shall put them to flight, and they shall flee as one flees from the sword, and they shall fall when none pursues. They shall stumble over one another as if to escape a sword, though none pursues, and you shall have no power to stand before your enemies, and you shall perish among the nations, and the land of your enemies shall eat you up." So this theme of the scattering of the Jews for their disobedience isn't unique to the book of Leviticus. It doesn't occur just once in the Bible. It features throughout the Old Testament. So we don't have time to cover all of the verses concerning the scattering of the Jews, but we'll just look at a few more just to prove this. So if we look in Jeremiah in chapter 9 and verse 16. So in Jeremiah chapter 9 and verse 16 we read, "I will scatter them among the nations whom neither they nor their fathers have known, and I will send the sword after them until I have consumed them." And then in Deuteronomy 4 and verse 27, which is on the screen, we read, "And the Lord will scatter you among the peoples, and you will be left few in number among the nations where the Lord will drive you." And also in Deuteronomy 28 and verse 64, we read, "And the Lord will scatter you among all peoples from one end of the earth to the other. And there you shall serve other gods of wood and stone, which neither you nor your fathers have known." Again, in Ezekiel 22 and verse 15, we read, "I will scatter you among the nations and disperse you throughout all the countries, and I will consume your uncleanness out of you." So we've seen in the history of the Jews, we've seen exactly what happened to them for their disobedience, and that they were scattered into exile while the land was taken away from them. While they were in exile, they were persecuted. The Bible also predicts with great accuracy this persecution of the Jews that we've looked at. So it accurately prophesies the long-standing existence of anti-Semitism. So in Deuteronomy chapter 28, which we read for an introduction, and in verse 37 we read, "And ye shall become a horror and a proverb and a byword among all the peoples where the Lord will lead you away." In Jeremiah 24 and verse 9 we also read, and perhaps thinking of the anti-Semitic picture of which the Nazis propagated. So Jeremiah 24 and verse 9, I will make them a horror to all the kingdoms of the earth, to be a reproach, a byword, a taunt, and a curse in all the places where I shall drive them. So we've seen in our brief introduction to the history of anti-Semitism that this is exactly what happened to the Jews. They were singled out and persecuted. And although they enjoyed a few years of peace, the persecution would always come. So as Theodor Hertz stated, we might perhaps be able to merge ourselves entirely into surrounding races if they were to leave us in peace for a space of two generations. But they will never leave us in peace. For a little while they manage to tolerate us, and then their hostility breaks out again and again. So they were constantly targeted for the death of Christ, for the Black Death in the Middle Ages, and for the economic crisis, for instance, in Germany. And these are only to name but a few examples. So a point which constantly came to my mind when I was writing this is that the scattering of the Jews and anti-Semitism is a massive subject. This only provides a glimpse into the history of the Jews. And truly, the more you read about the history of the Jews, the more convincing it becomes that the Bible is God's word. The skeptic might say that the Jews were aware of this prophecy and that they enacted it. But firstly, how possibly could they have done this? And secondly, why would they want to enact such a terrible history that brought them so much suffering? Surely this sort of skepticism needs a blind faith. So we've not looked at perhaps the most remarkable part of Bible prophecy concerning the Jews, that the Jews would return to their land and once again have a country that they could call their own. Again, this was predicted in the Bible thousands of years before the event. So we read in Jeremiah 31 and verse 10, if you could turn there. Well, it's actually on the screen, so it's okay. So Jeremiah 31 and verse 10. Hear the word of the Lord, O nations, and declare it in constant lands for far away. Say, he who scattered Israel will gather him and will keep him as a shepherd keeps his flock. And also in Ezekiel chapter 36 and verse 24. I will take you from the nations and gather you from all the countries and bring you into your own land, which is what this map depicts. So if we read to the end of chapter 26 of Leviticus that we've read about concerning the scattering of the Jews, we see that the Jews wouldn't totally be destroyed by God, and that he would keep the promise he made to Abraham that the Jews would be a great nation of Israel. This is because he is a merciful God and his mercy endures forever. So in Leviticus 26 and verse 44 and 45, we read the following. Yet for all that, when they are in the land of their enemies, I will not spurn them, neither will I abhor them so as to destroy them utterly and break my covenant with them, for I am the Lord their God. But I, for their sake, remember the covenant with their forefathers, whom I brought out of the land in Egypt, in the sight of the nations, that I might be their God. I am the Lord. So the history of the establishment of the State of Israel is, again, absolutely fascinating. And we don't have time to cover it in too much detail, so we'll just look at the key events. So it is true that the Jews in exile longed to return to their land, but for the vast majority of them, this was impossible. However, in the 19th century, when Zionism, which was a form of nationalism of the Jews and Jewish culture that supported a Jewish nation state, a national state, sorry, in the territory defined of the land of Israel. So this Zionism came about in the 19th century, and this hope that they might return to their land gained a little strength. So interestingly, when the Zionist movement was first formed, which was founded by Theodor Hertz, and originally actually sought a homeland in British East Africa in Uganda, and this was offered to Herzl in 1903. However, despite his efforts, it didn't actually gain widespread support. So I thought that was really interesting that the first place that was offered was not in Israel. The movement did gain a great deal of impetus with the Balfour Declaration, which was introduced in 1917, of which I'm sure a few of us, or most of us, are fairly familiar. So this stated, "His Majesty's government view with favour the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people, and will use their best endeavours to facilitate the achievement of this object. It being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine, or the rights and political status enjoyed by Jews in any other countries." So although this seemed like a step in the right direction, it would actually take another 30 years and the mass murder of 6 million Jews to really get the wheels turning on the establishment of the State of Israel. Even during the war, when Britain was aware of the Holocaust, it severely restricted Jewish migration to Palestine, which it had control of, so that only a tiny amount of Jews were actually saved. However, in 1948, after several significant terrorist instances, such as the bombing of the King David Hotel in 1946, which is pictured here, Britain finally ended their 30-year rule of Palestine, and the State of Israel was once again declared on the 15th of May 1948. So the Jews had returned to their homeland after 2,000 years, and they had kept their identity as Jews. So this is an incredible fact of history. How could anyone have foretold this, we might ask? The point is that only God, who controls everything in heaven and on earth, could have brought this about. To just help underline how flimsy human predictions are, we'll just consider an experiment that was conducted by Professor Philip E. Tetlock. So this book details the experiment. So in this experiment, this professor asked 284 experts in many fields. And these experts included government officials, professors, and journalists. And they were asked to make 28,000 predictions about the future in the next 20 years. So they had 20,000 opportunities. So the findings demonstrated from their predictions that even these so-called experts were actually only slightly higher than chance. And what's more, the predictions that they made were actually worse than even the most basic computer algorithms. Therefore, it's amazing, isn't it, that the history of the Jews, their scattering and their persecution and return, was predicted with absolute accuracy thousands of years before the events themselves took place. Furthermore, there aren't thousands of other prophecies that haven't come true. They've all come true. So the probability of this coming about by chance is so slight it's not even worth considering. The only logical conclusion that we can make are that the Jews are God's people, and God has total and utter control of everything in this world. His inspired prophets foretell this with staggering accuracy, and under his control, these events have come into being. Thank you for listening.